Bob, it's Phil.
Hello, Tasso.
Hi, Phil.
Who else is here?
Troy.
Hello, Troy. And?
Tony's here.
Hello, Tony. Did you guys happen to see the Conor McGregor fight?
I watched
it. Did you watch it live?
Sure did.
What did you think?
It was either going to go one way or the other, and it went to
be. Were you shocked at the end, though?
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy,
I like
crazy.
How he says, it's despicable. We don't want anything like that in our sport. And they'll be using those clips to promote the next fight.
Actually, at one point, they just took, like, a really aerial view. Like, for some reason, they just weren't showing it anymore. Did you notice that?
Yes. That was the producer. They didn't want you to see what was really happening, because as soon as he jumped into the audience, they took you away from the action. But
right.
I guess they didn't figure that they had about at least 1,000 people with their cell phones.
Right. So was that good for UFC or bad?
Was it good for UFC?
Yeah.
It was great for UFC.
I think so, too.
Ultimately, the real winner is Dana White.
And I think he did a really good balancing act of the way he handled it, how upset he got. But the truth is, it's just going to make him several more hundred millions of dollars, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
We'll see what happens, because now they want to do that show of force and suspend Khabib's partner. But, you know, really now that Khabib's partner is fighting Conor's teammate, he should say, well, we're going to let them fight and we're going to deal with it afterwards, but there's going to be some repercussions, because now there's a lot of hype behind that fight.
Absolutely. And then what do you think about the rematch?
The rematch? You know, it'll be interesting.
Is that going to happen?
I'm thinking that Conor was going to catch him.
Are you guys still here? Did I just get off?
We're here.
Hello.
Hello,
yeah,
we're here. We're here.
Hello.
We must have lost Bill.
Yeah.
I don't think they're getting anything from the hurricanes down there, so. Tony, you sound tired.
I was done early, so I've been lying down for like the last hour and change.
I got to work early, and then at 9 o'clock I went and got my eyes dilated. I've been trying to work with those and got a horrible headache. I'm sitting here in the dark with a flashlight because the lights are too bright otherwise. You know, once you get one of those headaches from that kind of junk.
Oh, yeah. The lights bothering your eyes?
Yeah, just because they got dilated.
Oh. That's a tough one. So what did you think of the fight? Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it. Troy and I were actually at a conference on microcirculation in Orlando.
Oh, okay.
And
I'm back.
Saw the highlights the next day.
Gotcha.
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, we
hear you.
Okay.
But I was saying that we'll see if he's lenient on Khabib's partner and lets him fight, then, you know, Conor's got a 6-fight deal, but they got to figure out what they're going to do next. If you think about it, he lost three of his last 4 contests now. So he needs to win, or people are going to stop paying attention.
All right.
And then they say that Khabib may be going to have to do time.
You know what? After what Conor did in New York, and even though it wasn't at an athletic commission-sanctioned bout, you know, the thing about it, he probably wasn't going to fight for 4 to 6 months anyway. They'll probably suspend him. They'll take some money, and then we'll see what happens. If Conor didn't lose his visa for that, it's very doubtful that Khabib is going to lose his visa for this, dude. There's just you know, someone's gonna take some money to keep him in the country. There's just too much at stake. But now the problem is, Khabib is publicly putting pressure on Dana White, saying if you suspend my partner, then I'm not gonna fight. And they ask, well, what about the purse? And he's like, keep the $2 million. He doesn't care. Or at least he's saying he doesn't care. Man drama.
Well, there's only men here right now. Velma's not here, right? Is that her? Ears ringing? Who just signed in? Tammy? Velma?
Jason here.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
More man drama.
I want to talk a little bit today about the concept of influence and the concept of power, and I think they go together. And there are two words that I've taught, two words that really kind of underline concepts that I've taught for many years. And they're words that even to this day, personal trainers don't like. I know there was one personal trainer in particular who really hated that I used one of these words. But I do think that these are the words that underlie the ability of a personal trainer to really carve his or her own way. And those words are power and pain. And when I talk about power in front of an audience of personal trainers, they cringe because of what they perceive I mean. They think that power somehow means greed. They think it's Gordon Gekko. They think it's, you know, Napoleon. They think it's take over and be king. And because they're so uncomfortable with that word, even though they like it in terms of athletics, it's an intimidating word because it almost puts them on the spot. And they also find that even though they're very happy being a fitness leader, most personal trainers don't really want to be leaders at all. They can pretend to lead using other people's stuff. But I believe that's a weakness in our industry, is the unwillingness of our peers to be willing to accept the word power. The other word I said is pain. And that's the one that Juan Carlos Santana had a major issue with. He said, Phil, I love everything you do, but man, you can't teach trainers about pain. And to this day, he would say that. And when I taught Navaca to his staff, he would ask that I teach it differently and don't use the word pain. He goes, I love it, it works, but don't use the word pain. So, you know, here I've had many years to reflect on the reluctance of our industry to really embrace those two words, and I'm unwavering. These are two really important words, and they're part of why our industry is weak. I have now had quite a bit of experience with the Medical Fitness Network. I like it. I like the vision. I like where it's going to go. But I take issue with a certain element of it, and I'm spearheading a movement away from expecting it to ride on the backs of personal trainers. I believe personal trainers certainly need to be a part of it, but they won't support a movement like this. I mean, if you ask them, do you support it, they'll say yes, but will they really support it? No. Will they spend money to buy from the sponsors at events that are really selling things that are radically different outside of our realm? No. They'll follow. They'll show up at events if they're priced economically enough, and they'll listen, and they'll nod their heads a lot, and they'll go, yeah, I want to do this. But will they really get up and change? Most of them won't. And it's because they're not comfortable with the concept of power. Just like they're not fully comfortable with the concept of doing what we do for money, they somehow reject the idea that power is at all important. And as I said, I now have the opportunity to reflect, and I think of how many times personal trainers have said things to me like, I don't want to sell. I only want to train people who want to train with me. That is a complete abdication of their power. I had a conversation with a couple of the athletic directors at some of the Platinum Clubs. Platinum Clubs are the old, mostly they used to be predominantly male clubs. They were more like a whiskey and cigar place than they were a fitness place. And it was where millionaires and billionaires could go to play golf or socialize or network or strike big deals or drink martinis. And they all had a fitness center. And these are things like the New York Athletic Club, the Washington Athletic Club. And they've banded together and they've branded themselves as the Platinum Clubs. And every one of them has billionaires as members. And their membership includes people like George Bush. And, you know, I spoke to their athletic directors. And only one, and this one is certainly a standout, really had power. And he is by nature entrepreneurial, and he's made some changes. But the rest, they're just happy to have their jobs because they get a paycheck and they get benefits. And they have a membership and they're appreciated. But they don't even strive for power. Now, guys, as I'm saying this, does this impact you at all in any way? Like, are you going, well, yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I don't want to have power. Or are you, in a sense, anticipating or feeling where I'm going with this?
I'm anticipating where you're going with it.
I think power really means, in terms of a human being, the ability to dictate the way things go. And does that mean that power is absolute and infinite? Maybe if you're God, but certainly not for humans. I think there is certainly such a thing as an abuse of power. I think there is something that is pathological that would be a great hunger for extreme power. But I think a part of what really separates somebody who'd be considered a natural-born entrepreneur from an employee is the entrepreneur enjoys having the power to make things happen, even enjoys having the power to fix things, to fix problems, to move out of chaos. That's all a part of being an entrepreneur. And I'm telling you this, most personal trainers don't like that. Now, I'm going to tell you this, most doctors don't like that either. Are there doctors who want to be powerful? Yeah, they're innovators. You know, they may be great surgeons. Many doctors don't want to be surgeons. They don't want that kind of power. Because with it comes risk. With it comes having to put yourself on the line. You know, you have to justify your power. You have to prove your power again and again and again. So being that our industry is not rife with power, we have a state of mediocrity. And although not a lot of trainers like to either hear that or even admit it, it's an absolute truth. We have an industry of mediocrity. When I've sat in on CEO meetings or roundtable meetings of higher-ups in the industry and the true club owners and the regional chain owners, and Tasso, you know many of the people I'm talking about, they need power. But every single one of them has taken risks. Every single one of them has had some losses along the way. But none of them went to get a job as an employee. They can't do it because they need power. So when you open your Ascension account, you are claiming that you are willing to put yourself on the line, not for anybody but yourself, by claiming power over what you grow in your own garden. You've stepped away from being reliant on a paycheck that somebody else gives you. There is a level, and this is purely you're the judge and jury, but there is a level of sink or swim or pass or fail. can you create $1 million? Well, yes, by virtue of the fact that you're human and you live in society, but you have an ability equal to anybody else. But to accept that it is fully within your power, that's the difficult part. That's the really difficult part. If a bill shows up that you didn't expect, if you have power, you figure out what to do. Maybe you negotiate the bill. Maybe you find a way to not have to pay the full amount. Or maybe it prompts you or motivates you to do something extra so you make more money and you can not only cover the bill but put away some money. When I speak to entrepreneurs, they all get this. They fully embrace what I'm talking about. But when I speak to most personal trainers, they don't. They don't like the word power. So for many years, I've spoken to large audiences of trainers, and a few step forward and are willing to claim their own power. But most of them, and I'm telling you, man, I hear from guys now who go, I came to your event 20 years ago, and man, it was great. I go, what are you doing now? And they go, working for the post office. I'm working on the Long Island Railroad. Why? Because the industry, because my wife, because they've abdicated their power. So this becomes a critical time for you if you're listening to what I'm saying, where you truly decide, do you have the power to dictate where you go from here? I know you do. But do you? Are you willing to claim it? Are you really willing to stand on it? So power becomes an important part of influence because if I don't think I can influence my own financial condition when a bill shows up, I've given up my power. If I don't think I can influence somebody who at first says, I have no interest in what you're selling, I've given up my power. If one angry person ruins my day, I've given up my power. But if I'm willing to stand in it, and I'm willing to assess, and I'm willing to think critically, then that doesn't make me greedy. That makes me responsible, and that's the power. So when we talk about influence, on one end, we have to own our own power, or we're going to lose whenever it gets a little challenging. A lot of this thinking came out of a conversation I had with Velma prior to our last call. We talked about the one-way power flow. We have a unique ability to have a one-way power flow. A dog groomer doesn't have that. A waitress doesn't have that. They're in a service business where, in a sense, they are subservient to what the customer is asking for. We are in a service business, however, we are also being asked for our advice. And that gives us a power flow if we're willing to take it. You know, there was a time that I would just stop and think. Forgive me if I mentioned this to you before, but it was really a moment for me. I was going to say there were moments where I stopped and I would think and I go, I can't believe all these people are listening to me. Like, you know, there was a time where I was really training high-level executives and I would say, do this, do this, do this, and they would do it. But I'll tell you where a lot of that came from. And if I did tell you this, it's only because it really was such a moment for me, but I saw Paul Simon live in Central Park. Now, what makes it even more interesting is I was introduced to Paul Simon personally, and he walked me down the block to introduce me to his voice teacher. So this is a lot of years ago. But I got to walk down the block with Paul Simon. And what struck me more than anything else is he's a regular guy. And nobody noticed him. He was wearing like a long coat. It was like fall time in New York. And we're just talking. And sometime after that, here he is doing a free concert in Central Park on stage, just him and a guitar. And I watched, I faced the other way, and I watched this sea of people. And I said, man, look at the power this one man on that stage, this one unassuming man, has over everybody here. In a moment, they're clapping and dancing. In another moment, they're standing solemn, listening to the boxer. And it was such an awesome realization that this is not power to take over a country, but this is power to impact people's emotions and lives, even if it's just for a couple of hours. So there's this awe, and I would have to believe he feels it. So there were moments when I realized that if I'm standing in front of an audience and I tell everybody to get up and do a silly dance and they do it, you know, it just, in a sense, there was an awe. But it's a power. And why was I doing it? Because ultimately I believe I'm influencing them to buy my programs. Now, that's where most trainers hear that and they go, ah, there you go, selling out. Nothing to do with selling out. That's how I change people's lives. If any of you guys were at any of my big seminars years ago, you know, I had my trainers in the back of the room. So why am I doing it? Why am I asking people to stand up and do something silly or close their eyes and do a meditation? Because I want them to sign up with my trainers. Is that greedy? No. I had the power to get them into that room, and now I have to exert my power to get them to take the actions necessary so that we can change their lives. So wherever I go, whether I'm at a doctor's appointment or having lunch in a cafe, when I feel an opportunity to get a client or to get somebody to use Thrive or to get somebody to sign up for one of my programs, it's all in my power. Does it mean I hit it every time? No. But I'm never fearful. I would never say I only want to help people who ask me for help. Because that's weakness. So if you guys are willing to use that Ascension account now as a gauge of your own power to really increase your ability to live with freedom, then you've got to start to exert it. So when we talk about influence, that's really what it comes down to, the power to influence people, the power to influence your clients to stay with you. The power to influence your clients to get you more clients through referrals. The power to impact the people in the doctor's office or in the cafeteria or the cafe. It all really comes down to power. So from this moment forward, you guys need to be comfortable with that word. And anytime you blame something and you go, this didn't work, it's not the thing that didn't work. It was your unwillingness to recognize that you have the power to do it differently or do it better. So I'm going to talk about influence, and I want to share some strategies and techniques with you. And I want to tell you what really makes a difference. But first, we have to understand the other word, pain. Carlos said to me, trainers hate the word pain. Now, at the time, Carlos was training Navy SEALs. And we had long discussions about it. And he goes, no, Phil, they learn the pain as their friend, so Navy SEALs are different. Because they learn to feel pain and not react to it. But trainers, they cringe, they fall apart, they don't like any pain. As soon as there's pain, they want to run in the other direction. And I said, that's because they don't have power. Man, we need to exploit people's pain to get them to act. The best tool we have to influence people is to get them in touch with their own pain. I have an odd gift or ability that I never asked for. Very often, people cry in my presence. Now, I don't take it personally anymore, but I've learned that if I can ask questions and truly be interested, that sometimes I tap into something and there's this moment of tears. And that moment is typically a breakthrough moment. It's one of two things. It's either their sudden acknowledgement that they themselves have power. It's when somebody with weight loss resistance gets on the scale and they weigh 10 pounds less. Or when we redo the symptoms checklist and they have that holy shit moment. I didn't realize all these things were getting better. There's emotion. There's this outpouring of emotion. But other times it happens because they're willing to be honest. They're willing to confront their present circle of discontent. And I learned a long time ago that when you say, what are you looking for? And they go, want to get in shape, want to get fit. It doesn't mean anything. It's only when we tap into that emotion that they feel the pain that will prompt them to act. So I don't love causing people pain. I hate causing people pain. But I'm not causing the pain. It's already there. I'm just accessing it so they get prompted to make a change. So if you want to be effective at influence, you've got to be comfortable with those two poles, power and pain.
Yes.
Can I get some thoughts from you guys on that? Is what I'm saying resonating with you, or is part of it, part of you going, yeah, hey, I am like most trainers. I hate those concepts.
Phil, I believe I agree with what you're saying, but I think the thing you said...
Tasso, can I ask you to either get close to your phone or just speak a little louder?
Okay. I'm holding my phone, so...
No, that's good now.
Okay. So I think it was the last call we had. You told the story that when you first started, you had all these people that were rich clients, you were training them, and you realized that really you were just their gardener. And
right.
And then you realize that you couldn't really socialize and be with them because your relationship was that I'm bringing them a solution. I'm not a service. I am an answer for them. And that really resonated with me, and that's why this resonates so strong. I think I embrace building power to influence situations and things of that in the community as well as in my club. But I think that statement made me more committed to understand what my role was in using that power and understanding that what my relationship had to be in that sense. I don't know if I'm sort of talking in circles, but my point is that's why I embrace what you're saying is because we can't be their friends. You know, when we started out, it was like the way to lose a client was to start partying with them, and then they say, well, gee, you know, I'm not going to work as hard because I know this guy parties just like I do, you know. Type of thing. So I tend to have pulled away from that the last 10, 15 years. I don't go out with my clients. I don't have parties with them. If I have a party, it's something I have as a celebration because of the business of the club or of that nature.
Yeah, man, I think we've all learned the lessons, you know. I think we've all made the mistakes of socializing with employees a little too closely. Or socializing with clients, you know, a little too closely. And at first, we're flattered by it because we get a sense of, oh, they really like me. But you're right. That's the end of the professional relationship. The, oh, they really like me is a momentary, wow, I'm kind of in the club, that deludes you into thinking you're really in the club. But you're not in the club if you can't afford the Ferrari that they're driving. You just felt like it because you thought they liked you. So, yeah, it's when we kind of grab hold of what it is that we do, and you said it well, we have a responsibility, but there is that lure of being liked and embraced and welcomed into their circle, but we have to realize we're not in their circle. So we have to create our own circle, and a part of that is maintaining a professional distance. Thank you, Tasso. Anyone else? Jason, does this resonate with you at all?
Very much so. I agree with a lot of it, or I should say all of it. And I think at times, as you're talking, at times I recognize that I struggle is that, like you said, I either give up the power or don't recognize my power in the moment, and it goes away. So, yeah, I think it's right on point, man.
And what do you think about the importance of utilizing pain?
Oh, I love it. I do it all the time. Because I do it all the time because of the things I've learned from you and how to influence people and knowing that it is a bigger driver of movement than a positive outcome, even though that could work as well. Pain has always been a more dominant influencer on people. And that's how I've always looked at it. I'm not fearful of the word power. I recognize that it's ability to influence people, not, like you said, not about power taking over a country or, you know, stroking your ego. It's about understanding your God-given ability to influence people. I think it's why a lot of times I've always envisioned myself on a stage in front of a large audience, whether it's just a perspective or something that's going to happen in the future. I don't know, but I've always felt comfortable in that moment because it's a moment of influence over people that are listening, not a moment of self-ego or being in the limelight. It probably would be the exact opposite. But for me, I'm right on point with this stuff. I love it.
You've actually demonstrated an elevation in your last two videos, or at least the last two that I saw. The one where you're just speaking very candidly and just relaxed about Thrive, and the other one where you spoke to Amy, the doctor, I thought you did a really good job of exerting your power. Now, if we take anything, we could break it down frame by frame and be critical, because the idea is we always want to be better. But I saw you stepping into your power because you took power over the content. You knew where you wanted to go. You steered her, and she's a doctor, and you started to come across as – although she is the doctor, you are the expert. And I think that's a big leap. I think it takes a long time for personal trainers to get to that point. Do you?
I don't know. Because that to me is easier than other things that I have to do and that I do.
Well,
and
okay.
Maybe just lately just building up to the moment of, like you said, just recognizing the moment. I see great opportunity in that kind of media. I think because of – I think also, too, like I've been in the situation where I've had to lead worship for my temple, my congregation. So I've been in front of this thing for like 15 years where you're in that moment of – in front of a microphone, if you blow it, everyone notices. So that live moment – I've really been refined over the years at embracing, and I'd say over the last year, recognizing more so than ever, being a more introverted person, that moment to me is actually more freeing, and I look more towards that as it feeds me than what it used to do as far as cause fear. Does that make sense?
Yes. Let's go back to the talk with Amy, though.
Okay.
You took a leadership role in that conversation. Would you agree?
Correct.
She's a doctor, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the same Jason who's able to take a leadership role with a doctor is the same Jason who goes, I'd like to meet with a doctor. What should I say?
Exactly.
So let me ask you this. Why is Amy a doctor? Why is she a doctor?
She wants to help people.
Why?
Say again?
Why is she? Was she born a doctor? Like, what makes her a doctor?
Oh, her schooling.
Okay. So her decisions, her choices, her willingness to study and take tests and perform, right?
Right.
So it's not because she's an elevated human being. And what makes you a trainer? Isn't it the same? Your desire, your schooling. Now, if we put personal training schooling and doctor schooling side by side, of course we pale by comparison, but that's what I've always said about our industry. Most trainers go, I want to be paid like doctors, but they don't realize the level of work. But Jason, you've done a lot of work to not be mediocre.
Right.
So whoever you're in a conversation with, it doesn't matter if they're a doctor or a celebrity or just a client that you've had for years. You have the ability to gain the power in that conversation. And it's only when you get past the smoke that makes you think that you don't, that you really start to step into it fully. But if you really look at that interview as evidence that you can have control over a conversation with a doctor, that could carry to every conversation with a doctor.
Yeah, I can see it. I agree.
Tasso, you went through this too. You know, for a while you were intimidated by how do I get doctors to do certain things, and then eventually you realize you could be peer-to-peer with them speaking on the same stage, right?
Right.
So power and pain are really going to dictate how you shape your Ascension account, how you shape your future, what you become. And they both play into influence. So let me give you some real fundamental things about influence that aren't usually spoken about. Imagine you're in a parking lot by yourself and there's a cat. What goes through your head if the cat is just sitting there looking at you? What would be a thought that doesn't usually rise up to the conscious level, but if you think about it, you know you're thinking it. You see a cat.
Whose
cat
is
staring at you? What's that?
Whose cat is this?
Okay. What else? You're not going to get that answer, whose cat is this, right away, but what can you try to determine right away?
Is the cat healthy? Is the cat sick?
Okay. You can't determine those things right away. But what might you ask that you can determine right away?
What color it is? What does it look, what it looks like? Or that it's a cat compared to some other animal?
Okay. You discern that it's a cat. So it's, you go, what is that? And you go, it's a cat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a white cat. But then what, just because you're a human being, by nature, is your brain going to ask?
Nature.
Yeah. Let's change the cat to a big dog, a Doberman. You're in the parking lot. A Doberman is sitting there looking at you.
Oh. Does it see me and is it safe? I mean, is it not safe? Is the dog safe? Or am I safe being around the dog?
Mm. Right. So always first, our brain wants to know if we're safe. Always. That's how we're wired. So that part of our brain is referred to as the reptilian brain because we share it with reptiles. It's the part of the brain that we can say governs fight or flight. And it is connected with the limbic system. The limbic system is more of the emotion brain, but the reptilian brain doesn't do a lot of reasoning. It makes very rapid decisions. Is Tammy here? I want to share something about Tammy's husband, Billy. So, Tammy, when you listen to the recording, I hope you're okay with this, and I hope Billy's okay with this. But, you know, Tammy and Billy are both selling Thrive and Isagenix. And Billy really studies things. He really wants to learn everything about them. And we've had long conversations, and he really gets into detail. So the reptilian brain doesn't know how to do that. A lizard doesn't study anything. So we can right away say Billy is not a lizard. He's evolved much farther than a lizard. The part of his brain that's very active is the neocortex, the human part, the thinking brain. So he has a lot of conversations about Thrive. And in the conversations, he really tells people a lot of things because he knows a lot of things. And more often than not, he's met with an excuse. Can you guess why, based on the direction I'm headed? He really studies it. He really knows a lot of facts, true facts. And he can talk about hydroxycitric acid. He can talk about Garcinia cambogia. We can talk about theobromine now. He's very busy in his cerebral cortex. Tony, you like dogs?
Love dogs.
So suppose you know the Doberman is safe. Suppose you find out it's friendly, it's sticking out its tongue, it's wagging its tail. What would you do?
I would call it over.
Okay, and then it comes over, and then what do you do?
I pet him.
Okay. But first you have to make that assessment, right?
Absolutely.
So you're first deciding by nature, not by choice, by nature, whether this is safe. That's where your thought process goes initially. And once you say it's safe, you embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is reptilian brain, limbic system. Then you might start to wonder things about the dog, like, why is it here, and whose is it, and does it have a collar? Because then you go into your thinking brain.
Right.
So the order is reptile, emotion, thinking. When we plan to influence somebody, we're in our neocortex because we're planning. We're going, what should I say? If I say this, will he say that? So we're thinking. Here's the problem. They're not ready with their neocortex. They haven't made it through the other two gates yet. So when Billy starts to talk to somebody and sounds like a college professor in the information he's delivering, they're not receiving it at all because he didn't make it through the first two gates. And I see a lot of people do that. We learn a lot, and we want to share a lot. So, you know, you talk to somebody, and they go, oh, yeah, I have a thyroid issue. And now we start to explain what we know, you know, about T3 and T4 not converting to T3, and we start to talk about what happens when doctors medicate people. But, man, we haven't even made it through the is this person safe yet. So if we want to influence, here's what we have to learn. We cannot jump right to convince them with facts. We cannot jump to talking about features because they haven't even allowed you access to that part of the brain yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's kind of like you're the Doberman in the parking lot or the cat in the parking lot or the rat in the parking lot. First, there is this human need to assess you, to assess what you're coming with. They're not open in the neocortex yet, not to you. So the reptilian brain will ask, is this dangerous? Should I run? Do I have to fight? So if a lizard's on a rock and you show up and suddenly it sees you, there's this moment where it freezes and it's going through this process. Is there danger? Should I run? Do I have to fight? Can I eat this thing? Can I mate with it? Is it useful to me? Is it worth my attention? Now, even a lizard may go beyond eat and mate and ask, is this useful? For example, it might be a rock that the lizard can live under. Alligators actually nest, so it might be looking for a space and going, is this good for my nest? But that's where a brain goes first. Is this worth my time? Should I even pay attention to it? So now if we take this into the human world, if you have somebody who is repulsed by multi-level marketing offers, as soon as you say, hey, I have a direct marketing product I want to share with you, understand what happens. They're not thinking. They're not making an educated decision. Their brain didn't even open to it because they're wired to shut you out. They're not going to mate with you. They're not going to eat you. You're of no use to them. You're an annoyance. And then you'll get mad. You go, they didn't even give me the time of day. It's not their fault. You never made it through the first gate. if you can realize that there's a filtering system, then you can do things in the proper order so you can influence the way you want. And the sooner you go into the wisdom of what you know, the more likely they are to reject you. There is a filtering system. First, it has to be fed to the RAS. It has to merit attention. Because many things go by you in any given moment or hour that you don't even notice because your brain said they're not even worth paying attention to. Then the thought is developed a bit and it's sent through the amygdala, a gate. Is it going to make it to your conscious awareness for any lengthy period of time? Is the hypothalamus even going to need to evaluate whether this needs to go into the thinking brain? So it is gauged as to whether it's important and beneficial or important and dangerous. And if it's neither, it's gone. It's out of the RAS. So if you're coming across to somebody in a way that is not communicating that you are important and beneficial or your services are important and beneficial, then there's very little you can say to get them to do it. I know many years ago when I worked for Bally's, there were closing lines. So are you ready to take that first step down the road to health and get your membership today? You know, you say that. And every salesperson was taught that you don't let them leave until you try that line. But so often, they didn't even express that they had the slightest bit of interest. So it's a total waste of time. Their brain is closed to that. The answer is no. So you've got to be the friendly Doberman. Like, they have to open their arms to you to go, yes, I want to hear more. Then you can tell them the benefits. And you can outline some of the features and share the benefits with it. So this is why it's vital in influence to always start with need. If we know need, we know what the reptile brain will deem as important and beneficial. If we know need, we know what the reptile brain will deem as worthy of sending up to higher executive parts of the brain. It's like the receptionist at the lobby elevator. It's going, nope, not sending you up to the executives. You're annoying. You're selling umbrellas? No. Sorry, he's busy. He can't see you now. You here to fix the toilet that overflowed? Yes, we need you. Come on in. So unless you knew they had an overflowed toilet, you don't know what to say. This is why it's so important to find the need first. One of the greatest lessons I ever learned was I sat in on a presentation of Xerox, and they said, leave the brochure in the car. Most salespeople walk in with the brochure. They're immediately identified as a salesperson. Leave the brochure in the car. So never lead with the product. You can intrigue, you know, with Thrive, if you wear the patch, people are going to go, what's that? But as Tony now knows, you go right to need. You've caught their awareness, but we're not going to talk about the product yet. We're going to find out what they're looking to do. And I think, I don't know the percentages, but I would say most people who, even those who think they're good salesmen, if they miss this step, they're going to close less than half of the time, even if they're really good. So we have to start with need. So if you now know that you have a technology that can help people reverse type 2 diabetes, and they say, I have type 2 diabetes, and you go, hey, great, let me get you signed up for my program, it never made it past the first gate. You'd have to ask questions like, how does that make you feel? Oh, tired, I have no energy. Really? How long has this been going on? Oh, man. Feels like forever. I have an 8-year-old kid, and I just don't have the energy to keep up with him. Wow. Anything else? Yeah, look at my gut. I mean, I don't know if the gut caused the diabetes or diabetes caused the gut, but no matter what I do, I can't lose weight. Now you're starting to learn how to get through the first gate. Because if now the brain perceives, here's somebody who could give me energy and help me lower my blood sugar and help me drop the size of my gut, that gate opens wide. This isn't every case of influence. This isn't only when you're trying to sell a particular product. So this is a skill. And is it worth developing? Yes, because this gives you power. When you have a power over another person's decisions, you have a greater ability to thrive. Now, what we hope is that you do things ethically and morally, and you're leading them to make the right decisions for them. But it's that power and that willingness to tap into their pain that's going to truly give you the ability to grow. After need, we gather some ammunition. What is ammunition? Ammunition is the stuff that's already in their head that might lead to them coming up with an excuse or objections. We want to find out, you know, what have you tried? Because if we don't find that out, let me go back to the example of the diabetes and big gut and low energy. And we go, oh, I have a program. And they go, what's the program? And you go, it's eating right and exercise. And they're going to go, try that. And now they shut you out. They're still evaluating. So it would help you to say, well, what have you tried in the past? And they go, well, I've tried eating right and exercising. And you go, well, what did eating right mean? And they go, I only ate one meal a day. Oh. What were you doing for exercise? I was walking a mile a day. Oh. Now you have ammunition. Now you could explain why that didn't work for them. So need is first, ammunition is second. I haven't gotten to influence yet. I just got their guard down and I made it through the first gate. The ammunition helps so that we know what's already in there rather than guessing. And in a sense, we ride the wave that goes right to their PFC because they've identified things that help us understand what it is they need to hear so that they'll pay attention. Only after the critical filtering process does the cerebral cortex try and figure it out. So there, of course, is a period of time where they're open to hearing facts. But this is critical because they don't make the decision with the facts in their cerebral cortex. They make the decision in the limbic system. They make the decision based on emotion. So if you get into fact and you stay in fact and you're having a linear discussion, you go, yeah, well, it's an imbalance between the adrenals and the thyroid. You go, oh, well, what does that mean? Well, it means that you create more of something called RT3, reverse T3. What is RT3? It switches off the Krebs cycle. What is the Krebs cycle? It's the production of ATP. What is ATP? You're in this long, it's going nowhere. So if you get into that long, drawn out, here's a fact, here's a fact, here's a fact, and they go into learning mode, they're not in decision mode. So you've got to get into the cerebral cortex enough so they're willing to go, wow, I'm interested, and now an emotion rises up. Wow, I'm compelled, and then an emotion rises up. Wow, I'm hungry for this. And when they go into emotion, that's where the decision is made. So for any of you who've gone through my Navaka training, you know how it works. We find the need, we get ammunition, and then we prove that we are the vehicle to get them from where they are to where they want to be, the creative tension line. We are the vehicle. That's where we speak to the cerebral cortex. You never failed. The programs you tried in the past failed you. Let me tell you why. Everything you've done was a calorie-restrictive diet. When you go on a calorie-restrictive diet, your metabolism slows. So you'll lose weight in the short term, but ultimately your body will wind up fatter. And every time you go on a calorie-restrictive diet, it's going to happen again and again and again. And by the way, the only exercise you did was aerobic exercise, which by itself, with a calorie-restrictive diet, will lead to muscle wasting. You are catabolizing losing muscle. So you get on the scale, and you believe it's working because you weigh less, but ultimately the weight comes back, and it comes back as fat, not muscle. So the reason nothing worked for you is because you never had the strategy right. How would it feel if you got the strategy right and really started to achieve a sense of betterment every single day? How's your 9-year-old going to feel, because I know you have an 8-year-old now, a year from now, when you are super fit? Now we're taking it from cerebral cortex to emotion. And the decision is made in emotion. So get the thought through the entry system. Get the reptile brain to elevate it to being important. And use the strategy of finding the need, gathering ammunition, laying out facts that show that you're the vehicle to get them from where they are to where they want to be. Let them reason in the cerebral cortex that this is good, and then we go to emotion. And in my presentations, it is the alternatives. I get them to compare. What will life be like if you make the decision versus what will life be like if you don't? Now, with two people, whoever has the power flow is going to win. So if their agenda is, I need to get away from you because you're the Doberman in the parking lot and I deemed you annoying. You're the Doberman in the parking lot and I now see you have fleas. I want to get away from you. If you don't have the upper hand and the power flow, they will win. How will they win? They will get away from you. They won't do it the same as they would if they were a flea-bitten Doberman. But they'll make an excuse to go, oh, yeah, well, it sounds really good. Let me think about it. Do you have a website I can go to? Yeah, well, the holidays are coming. I'll do something in January. Do you have a card? That's them winning. That's them taking charge of the power flow. Whoever has the power flow is going to win. The power flow is gained subtly. By the way, they don't know. They didn't hear this. They're not on this call. They don't know there's even such a thing as a power flow. So if you feel like you're pulling something on them, they have no idea. You're simply influencing them because you're good at it. When you understand power flow and you exercise it, you're simply good at influence. So it's not underhanded. It's not devious. It's power. Whoever has the power flow in any two-person interaction is going to win. How do you get the power flow? You use definitive commands and probing or action-prompting questions. Now, the example I always give is when any personal trainer trains a client, they'll say, four more. That's a command. They don't negotiate. They don't go, you know what? Do you feel like you want to do another four or maybe you want to do two? They don't do that. So there is the opportunity that shows itself. That's what they're willing to take power over. You know, here's a perfect example. There are two things that I did in my pay structure that made the whole difference between losing money and making money as a personal trainer. One is I became consistent in my fees and I put people on a retainer. The second is it was a recurring session. They had to commit to an every. So I would teach that to trainers. Now, inevitably, some trainers would follow up with me. They go, well, my clients don't want to do that. See, that's the absence of the power flow. If you go, well, do you want to get on a series where you give me a retainer and you're obligated to every Tuesday at 4 o'clock? Nobody's going to say yes. You can't ask that and expect to win. You're giving them the power. You're handing it over. You're abdicating the throne. You're going, here, you're in charge of this decision, not me. So that's what I mean by giving up the power. It's only when you say, with the same authority that you go, do four more, that you go, my rates are $150 a session. If you get on a series, it's only $125, but you have to commit to every. So would you rather do once a week, twice a week, or three times a week? So I'm giving them a decision to make, but it is an action-driven decision. I'm not letting them make the call of what we're going to do or what we're going to talk about. I'm saying, here's how it works. I'm commanding you. I have the power. Which do you choose? Now, sometimes it's really subtle. Let me go out to the car and grab a sample, and then we'll get you signed up today. See, that's a command. But it's done in a way that it doesn't sound like I'm bossing somebody around. I'm going to put you in my calendar for next Tuesday at 4 o'clock, and as soon as I get home, I'm going to confirm it with you by text. That's different than, well, when do you want to set up the consultation? Well, I have family in town. I'll call you at the end of next week. You know they're not going to call. So all of these points that I'm sharing with you, and there aren't many, are golden. This is power. The power flow is lost when you allow the other person to make definitive decisions that you were granted the power to make. For example, if somebody goes, well, how often do I have to train with you? And you go, oh, well, it's entirely up to you. How often do you want to train with me? You didn't do a bad thing. You just gave up the power flow. You don't have to make the decision. You could return an action-prompted question. Most of my clients train with me three times a week, but if you want to make it more affordable, we can do two. Which would you prefer, two or three? That gives me the power flow. Or you give up the power when you allow your relationship to include a two-way exchange of unguarded confidences, meaning when you become buddies and friends. So I hope that lesson helped, because all of this leads to you being in command of where you go from here. If you don't have that Facebook group working yet, it's not because Facebook's hard. It's not because people don't want to respond. It's because you didn't exert your power fully. If you have $50 in your Ascension account, because that's what you opened it with, and you've had it there for 2 months, it's not because you didn't make enough money, it's because you didn't exert your power. And I know this is hard, I know. Responsibility is hard, but it makes all the difference. So here's what you have power over, generating more revenue. If your brain is immediately going to all the reasons you can't, then you've given up your power, and I'm telling you, you can take it back, but it starts with mindset. More revenue, more dollars of revenue as profit, or more percentage of revenue as profit, either way is fine. You have control over this. More profit center revenue, of which 50% goes into your Ascension account. And the agreement with yourself that the Ascension account balance can never go down. You can't take money out of it. I know there are times you get that unexpected bill, but that's how I started the call. There's opportunity in that. How will you handle this unexpected bill? The quickest, easiest option is to give up your power, reach into your Ascension account, and go, I'll pay it out of this. But that's the equivalent of becoming a friend with a client. It's giving up your power. Any thoughts, comments, questions on any of that? Any questions?
Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Phil, you also lose that power if you have a system and say, look, I'm going to put 10% of everything I have coming into the door, or 25% of this, or like you said, 50% of profit center. If I say I'm not going to put that in there this month because I have this coming off, correct?
Right.
So you've got to be consistent in saying, here's my system. Now I need to stick to it.
Yes. And by the way, you make your mortgage payment every month, no matter what, I'm guessing. You pay your electric bill every month, I'm guessing. So if you think of this with the same obligation, you find a way. You know, all of us have at some time been in dire straits where we had to figure out a way to make more money. We had to work a little harder. We had to do something extra. So we're more likely to do that when a bill must be paid. I'm saying treat this the same way. It's your garden and you're growing it. So to stop paying attention to it or to just leave it alone is going to really let it just fall apart. So yeah, that's a really good point, Tasso. And I don't think these are easy, but man, you guys didn't sign up for easy. This is really what makes the difference. Guys, hold on for 1 second. Hi, Brooke. Mom, I'd be better call. I'm going to pick you up at 6, okay? Yes. Okay? Okay. Does this sound useful in terms of influence? Are any of you hearing this and identifying where you might have missed this in the past, or how you might have given up your power, or you might have come charging too hard with what makes sense, realizing now those gates weren't even open. They weren't capable of making sense. You were speaking to a crocodile.
All of the above.
I'm going to put together a course that will be released through the Medical Fitness Network that I want to be a prerequisite for trainers coming into this organization, and I'm going to call it Permission, Power, and Pain. Because it's almost like if you can't grasp these concepts, you can't play in the big leagues. Jason, any feedback? Anything in here that makes you go, yep, I did that. I could have done that better. All right. Jason has either left us or is muted or sleeping. All right. So let me go on.
Baby.
Troy, any thoughts?
I agree with that and think of all kinds of times when I've done that, especially with scheduling, where I was kind of vague or whatever you want to do. And,
right. See, I'm glad you brought that up because we all want to be a nice guy. We do. We all want to be a nice guy. And none of us want to be an asshole. But the thought, like when a trainer hears this, they go, well, no, I want to be a nice guy, so I'm going to ask them when is convenient for them. And somehow they think that they're being perceived as a very nice guy when the fact is, they're being perceived as powerless. That says to the client, I have all the time in the world. You're in charge of me. So there's nothing not nice about doing what I'm suggesting. And if you remember what I said, you command them how many more reps to do, so you should command your schedule. So, yeah, good. Troy, I'm glad you identified that.
Phil, this is Gary.
Hey, Gary.
I came on a call late. I overslept.
You want me to start over?
Out. Yeah, could you start from the beginning?
Yeah. Anybody see the UFC fight, the McGregor fight?
I did.
No, that's where we started. Go ahead, Gary. What were you going to say?
I knew that's why you said that. you know, I recently interviewed a client, a potential client, right? And he told, you know, I actually went down there and did an interview with him first, right? And he told me the days that he can train, all right? And basically, that's all he had available to do it. Fortunately for me, it worked out for me. But what do you do in a case where, and you might have said this already, but I, like I said, I came on late, so I might have missed it. What would you do in a case where your time just doesn't match up with him? You just forget about it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Why should you inconvenience yourself? You know, there. I've been asked the question many times, so I have kind of knee-jerk responses. But, you know, try calling your dentist and saying, I want to have my teeth cleaned at 9 o'clock Friday night.
Yeah, you know, I understand what you're saying. And that's definitely the position you want to be in. But what if you don't have an influx of enough people?
Then you have the power to get other people. So that's a part of what I'm talking about. As long as you feel like you're at the mercy of what happens, then you are, in a sense, abdicating power. But if you have the ability to say, I am in control of my schedule, what might that mean? You do a little more networking. You go back and call some old clients. You follow up on another lead. You go pursue new connections tomorrow. You post something on Facebook. Like, you're not powerless. So if you interview somebody and it doesn't fit, then you have to be powerful enough to say, I own my calendar, and you're not going to change that. And ultimately, the mindset shift changes your actions, changes your outcomes. And I know it's hard to believe that until you do it. And then when you do it, you start preaching it. You tell other people. So I'm promising you this is a truism. Now, I'll tell you another phenomenon that I've seen often. Somebody goes, I can only train after 5 o'clock. That's all I can do. And I go, well, I'm looking at my calendar. I don't have any openings at 5 o'clock. The only openings I have are 10 a.m. and noon. And they'll go, oh, I could do noon on Thursday. So sometimes it happens that way too, because you've just been the dentist who says, I can clean your teeth 9 o'clock Friday. I'm going to be with my family. And then you go, okay, well, what do you have? Right? So I just think standing your ground and standing in your power ultimately leads you to a place where you have power over all of it, meaning your career. And every time you let people chip away at that, it weakens all of it, meaning your career.
Can I address that? Real quick.
Please. Yeah.
I had a client, one of my kids who's autistic, and we were meeting, we went from one day a week, he wanted to meet 2 days a week, and I was working with him on Friday afternoons after school, which was about 3:30, quarter to four, or something like that. And I had someone else, because I hated being there, because usually I was done by 11 o'clock on Friday. And I had somebody else who said, you know, who was meeting me after work. She was the coach of a team. And she's like, I'll meet you after work, after practice. We have practice on Friday. So I would be done at 11 o'clock and have to come back at quarter to four. And then meeting the other person at 5 o'clock, and I was going to be done like 6:15 or something like that on Friday. And I hated it. It was just the notion of being done by 11 on a Friday, then moving up to 6:15. And then I just went to the parent, and I said, listen, we were meeting a lot during the summer, and then because he wasn't in school, you know, we could meet during the day. So I was no longer accustomed to Friday. So she's like, well, can we go back to Friday? And I'm like, you know what? I thought about it. I'm not doing Fridays anymore. And she goes, what about Thursday?
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. That's exactly what happens.
And so we're doing Thursdays, and then the other, you know, person, she went away, and she's coming back. But I've already made my decision. I'm not going to do Fridays anymore. It's just
good.
It's just nice to be home early and to be relaxing. And so,
you know, anybody who's been through any sales training ever has learned, probably very poorly at first, but at some level, to overcome the objection, I don't have time. Because here's what we know. We all have the same 24 hours in a day. So everybody has the ability at some level to dictate how they use their time. So some of you have probably had clients who have crazy, crazy work schedules, but they're clients. They find a way. So maybe it's 5:30 in the morning. But at first, they don't want to do that. So I'm just saying, when you listen to the other person and you believe that what they said is an absolute, you're giving them the power. So if they go, the only time I have to train is, then all that is talk in this moment. That's not fact. So when you say, well, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to work with you because the only time I have is, I think you're going to be surprised how often they go, well, okay, I can do it at your time. That's the tug of war. That's the competition for the power flow. That's exactly what that is. So if you lose, they win.
But I think the big thing for me was that I just had to be, I was really resolute. I'm like, I can't get confused. I'm just not doing it anymore. It's not that it doesn't make me happy. It makes me unhappy to do it.
Right.
I'm just done with it.
So when you think about this why, and you don't have to answer the question, it's rhetorical at this point, but why would you let somebody make you unhappy? Because you've given up your power. That's the only reason. So you decided not to. All right, we are heading toward mid-October, and soon is coming Halloween. I know this because they have candy all over in Publix. And after Halloween comes November, and in November the Christmas tree goes up in the mall, and they start playing Christmas music, and Santa Claus shows up, and lots of people are spending money, and they go, I don't have money now because it's the holidays, and they go, I can't get in shape right now because it's the holidays. So this is the best time of year right now to head it off. This is the best time of year. The holiday season every year since I started changing my marketing has been a windfall for me, and it should be for you, because it used to be the opposite. It used to be like all my clients would stop training. Everybody would complain. They didn't have enough money. They had to go to a party. They weren't going to eat right. I'll start again in January. This is the time right now. So this is the time that you can claim your power. This is the time that you say before January 1st, I'm going to build up my Ascension account to whatever number you decide. But if you're going to go, oh, well, it's the holidays, can't get clients now, then I'm telling you, you're giving up your power. So for me, I have my holiday funnel. I have a seminar on November 13th. We will have 100 people there. And I'm selling my 7-day Firestorm live program. But until then, I'm offering the 7-day online program with videos included by those of you who submitted it. And those who haven't, you're welcome to now. 7 days for $37. Now I want to make this even better. For you, the $37 goes to me. But here's what I would suggest you do. Don't offer this to your clients. There's no reason for it. If they hear about it, you go, oh, you're so far past that. This is just for beginners. So do not offer it to your client. Make them feel ridiculous if they even ask about it. Like, oh, no, this isn't for you. It's like going back to kindergarten. But for anyone who you think should have become a client and they didn't, for any almosts, for anyone who you had contact with but didn't follow up, for people who you thought they'd be interested, they stopped replying to your texts, for anyone that you meet that's not immediately ready to sign up, I'm giving you this opportunity. I am urging you to suggest that they sign up for this program called the 7-Day Firestorm that has been created by a small group of trainers, because you're going to see Tony's videos in there. You're going to see Velma. You're going to see Jason Barron. You're going to see Ariel and anybody else who wants to do it, do it. So if your videos are up there, you're a part of this. That program sells for $147 online, $800 live with me in November. $147. Sells for $147 online, $800 live with me. They can get the program for $37. Now, how does that help you? Here's my suggestion. The only way you sell the program is it is $37 plus the day 8 consultation. You're getting them a program that sells for between $147 and $800. They can do it in their own home. They can get immediate access. They're going to go through 7 days. Every day has a short webinar, exercise videos, and handouts showing them exactly what to do. It's the simplest program I ever created. 7 days aimed at boosting metabolism. $37. They can start immediately. Now, to make it even sweeter, I'm doing the program live online beginning November 1st. And that $37 includes that. So whether they want to start the program tomorrow and do it again November 1st, they can. If they want to wait till November 1st, great. We're going to have a live webinar every night. I wanted to make this irresistible. So again, this is not for your clients. This is a funnel. So if you bring in 20 people and three of them become long-term clients, good. It's better than having 20 people out there that didn't do anything. So you're going to say it's a program that sells for between $147 and $800. All of the reasons I just gave you, it's really simple. You do it at home. The nutrition part is great. You don't have to get crazy diet foods. You don't have to spend any extra money on anything. All you need is a stability ball and a pair of dumbbells. $37. Plus, at the end of the 7 days, I'm going to do a full consultation with you. And you're going to come into that consultation understanding nutrition at a different level, understanding exercise at a level that many personal trainers don't. You're going to learn this concept called REBS that most personal trainers never even heard of. You're going to understand how to train recovery and how to reverse chronic disease. Then we do the consultation. So you're coming in with a major advantage, and then I'm going to guide you forward. So it's $37 for the program and $150 for the consultation. That's the way I would sell it. Now, I'll give you another option. If you're comfortable with this, because these are prospects, not clients yet, I would say $37 for the program, and I will do a post-program review with you by Skype or by Zoom for only $75. The whole idea is it's a funnel. So in the post-program meeting, whether it's a personal consultation for $150 or an online one for $75, you're going to try to convert them into a client. Worst case, you made $75 or $150 bucks. Best case, you funnel them forward. I'll follow that program with the metabolic reboot and then into a live. And then I'll also tell you guys this. I had a program years ago called Transform. There are 60,000 of them out there. Every day I still get testimonials from people, but a lot of it I feel is outdated. I'm going to, in 2019, create and conduct it online, Transform 2019. And it's going to be a combination of the Transform strategies. You go through a strength and growth phase, a muscle endurance and shaping phase, and a leanness phase, but it's going to bring in all of the alive concepts, all of the 42 principles. So my point is, this is a funnel. I just want low barrier of entry. Pay $37, get connected. If that's all you ever do, okay. But some of those people will follow through and become your client. You want to have a discussion about that? Any part of it? I'll answer any questions.
Yeah, how do we advertise this? Like, how would? I mean, what you just said sounds great, but honestly, when we hang up, I'm not going to know how to sell this program because I don't really know enough about it, even though you're talking about it.
Then I would ask those questions on our discussion board, whatever questions you have, and let's just refine it together because I don't think it's a one conversation thing. I think you already have a list of people who did not become clients. I'd say this to all of you. And if you don't think you do, then you take a notebook and you just start thinking. And every day or every time you have a thought, you go, oh, maybe this guy. Oh, maybe that guy. And it can really be as easy as a phone call. Hey, I have a great opportunity. I know you wanted to get in shape. What kind of shape are you in now? Find the need. Get a little bit of ammunition. What have we done since we spoke last time? Great. And what are you doing now? Okay, well, I have an opportunity that I've never had before, and I want to share this with you. This is a program that can really get you started in a way that's going to change your life forever, and it's only 7 days. You can do the whole thing online, and this normally sells for $800. It's $37. You know, those phone calls, I think, are how you do it. I'm not looking to, although we can do, you know, Facebook marketing and put some posts up there. I think this is just organic. It's just you talking to the people that you know, or referrals, or asking clients that you have, you know, who do you know? I got a great opportunity for new people right now. You know, who do you know anybody who's not associated with exercise yet and they're intimidated? This would be a great program for them. So it's not an easy, you know, you ask the question, I go, well, here's what you do. It's just an opportunity that I'm offering. And the idea is more clients for 2019. So this is the funnel that brings them in through the holiday season. While most of America is getting fat, you're helping people get better so they don't have to make a New Year's resolution. So, Gary, you get the recording of this call. You could bullet point, you know, everything you heard, and then ask questions on the discussion board, and we'll refine and develop it. Good?
Yes, sir.
All right. Jason Barron, are you back? Troy, any thoughts on this?
Sorry, are you there?
Yeah.
Well, I don't really have a lot of thoughts. I think it's great. I think we need to definitely do exactly what you said and make calls. That's what I am going to do, because Facebook for these has not been very effective for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to try the organic approach.
Okay. Right? Now, for Facebook, I do have a free ebook called The 7-Day Metabolic Firestorm. And I'll tell you this, the ebook covers a lot of information. It's written in a way that's understandable. What it doesn't give them is the program. So there's something else you can try just for generating leads, is if you use Facebook, just offering the free ebook. And what they do is they comment below with their email address. So if you put a post, hey, my friend just came out with a free ebook. You want to get it? 7 days. It's going to show you how to speed metabolism. Just comment with your email address and I'll send it to you. And that opens up some dialogues and creates some leads for you. But I wouldn't invest a whole lot of time and energy and certainly not money in that. But it doesn't hurt to put those out.
Great.
How do we get the ebook from you?
I will email it to you. But I will also give you a form that you could submit it to, and they'll get it automatically.
Okay.
Okay, so I put that out there. Do you need this? No. I see it as an opportunity, I'm hoping. It's also nice to have a connection to a map. It's really cool when you have a group of people going through a program at the same time. So it's easy to talk to anyone when you know they're all in day four doing a protein day. You know, you just text them, how's the protein day going? So everybody's in the same place at the same time. And I've found that really valuable in managing groups, is it's nice. You know, everybody's in week four or week seven at the same time. It allows for easy communication. Okay, so the 7 days will begin live November 1st, but if they sign up, they can get the program immediately recorded. They don't have to wait till November 1st. And then they can also do the November 1st one. They'll get a jump on the holidays, and it's only $37. Okay, any thoughts, comments, questions on anything at all?
Phil, can I do the program for $37?
No, you got to pay the
$800. Is that a special price?
$7.99 for you. I'll even do $7.97. And we can do it in three easy payments.
Of
all right, I will get this I'll get this recording posted, but I really hope you took something from everything I shared about power and about influence and understanding the way the brain receives. Because I do witness, you know, I use Billy as an example, just because I see it, and he's trying really hard, and he's really smart and really dedicated. And he's getting frustrated because a lot of people are just kind of putting up a hand, and not in a rude way, but they're going, oh, yeah, well, talk to me next week. You know, oh, yeah, website. Oh, give me some more information. And that's – they see you as the Doberman with fleas. That's what it is. You haven't made it through the gates yet. You tried talking to their cerebral cortex, and it wasn't even open yet. So I hope you guys can – understand that and also utilize it, because I think it'll change the way you influence people. Until we speak again, be better, everybody. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.